changed the world here, people.
Oh, really?
Facebooking and the tweeting and the Instagramming, all that would not exist without our understanding of science.
So it's amazing how you took that as an insult.
You mean true for you is different from true for anybody else?
Have yeah,
you
absolutely, because I can't
think either got to be true or not.
I can't, no, no.
Well, good evening, O'Reilly Radio listeners. Welcome to show 51 for Friday, March 27th, 2015. And we have the usual suspects, an empty seat. I mean, Mike Robinson. He'll be back in a moment after he gets his beer. We've got David O'Connor. And we have a special guest this evening. Direct from the Great White North, Mr. Joe Pishkar.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
His first appearance here on O'Reilly Radio, so let's pop his cherry, as it were.
Oh, my.
No,
you have to use that phrasing in George Takei voice.
Oh my.
There
excellent.
You go.
Perfect.
Well done.
Perfect, perfect. Okay. Joe, since you are the special guest this evening, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself? Tell the listeners at home what the heck to expect.
My name's Joe Pishkar. I am a Florida native. Moved to New Hampshire a while ago. I'm a senior community manager by trade. Community management's my professional vocation. It's what I do when I'm not running for office and losing elections. I tend to be a vocal critic of a lot of politicians, and I've been involved in a number of campaigns, both local and state, statewide, dabbling even in a couple of congressional races here and there, with candidates who invariably do not take any advice. So I'm looking forward to a fun show with you guys and dishing on some of the issues that I've heard you bandy back and forth in previous shows.
Excellent. Fantastic.
Excellent.
I'm excited. Apparently I'm getting people that are saying things, and of course that's going to come across in the audio, so I pardon me, but who knows? It might actually be pertinent to the show. It has happened in the past. So
what's the where now?
Did you hear the little blink?
Oh, yeah, the bloop bloop.
Yes, occasionally those little blinks are actually germane to the topics at hand, because some people don't use the IRC, because, yes, IRC actually still does exist, people.
It's, IRC,
I know.
Wow.
It's amazing, yes. We have an IRC that's hosted by geekshed.net out on the webpage at O'ReillyRadio.com, O-R-L-Y. radio.com, where you can find all the links right there at the top of the page. Come on down.
Plug, 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 plug,
plug, plug, plug, plug, plug, plug, plug, plug.
Shameless self-promotion.
Shameless self-promotion. Activate. Yes. So be that as it may. Let's get into what we're actually here to talk about. Let's start with science, because we love science around here. Scientists managed to actually cut out the HIV virus using a DNA snipping enzyme called CAS9. This is for the first time. It's not exactly ready for prime time, as any scientist will tell you. It's like, yeah, we managed to do it once. That doesn't mean we can do it again. But this is, let's see.
It tells us it can be done.
In what, like 6 months or so, we've had a bunch of stories on eradicating HIV.
Ebola.
Well, Ebola was obviously the hot topic. But
that was a hot topic, which there's some news on that today. But
yeah, let's see. We've talked about it on show 46, show 44, show 15. It's been in our bailiwick. By the way, we have a great search field just on our page. If you ever want to just go through our notes and figure out what we have been talking about and when we talked about it, I use it just to make sure I don't duplicate stories. Which is very handy.
And even then, we sometimes fail at that.
Well, you know, sometimes... No, actually, we really haven't ever duplicated a story. Other news agencies have duplicated a story, and then we just covered it from their angle.
So what's the purpose behind eliminating the DNA strand for HIV? Is it because they're looking to target HIV in people who currently have it, or are they going at it via the approach of trying to develop custom genetic modifications for new people? Like, you know, you find out that you're pregnant or you're expecting a baby, you want to go in and have your child custom tailored, you know, get the $50,000 or whatever, $150,000 mm-hmm. custom genome that excludes vulnerability to HIV.
Well, we're not there yet.
Well, the human immunodeficiency virus is a lentivirus, which is a subgroup of retroviruses, which means that its method of replication is injecting its DNA strand into existing cells, kind of like how the herpes virus works. Because anyone who has a cold sore knows you have herpes at all times. Cold sores are just a form of the herpes simplex. So even if the disease is suppressed, you're still carrying around the genes for your disease in your cells, and it's being replicated by your you know cell division process, because the whole RNA transcripta, whatever it's called, doesn't know how to cut it out. So it just copies the virus along with the healthy DNA. The fact that we can go in and target it and cut it out of cells that it has infected is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, so this is a remediation. This is a somebody that already has it, and to allow the body to no longer replicate the HIV strains, it will basically edit it out.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other uses for this technology are far and wide.
This isn't where it came from.
It's probably not a huge leap to add something else back in.
Oh no, that part's easy. We've been doing that for years. It's removing something without damaging DNA strand around it. That's the trick.
Ooh. Yeah, apparently they're looking at weakening of the heart muscles, bone disease, kidney disease, and neurocognitive disorders as possible alternative treatments with this. So, yeah, they're science. Yes!
Science is doing some amazing things these days.
This is some amazing stuff.
I keep telling Claire we're going to be dragons. We're going to live as long as we want, and that's pretty much it.
Well,
By the time we're getting old... They're going to have a lot of shit figured out,
provided
the world doesn't explode.
We really need to get off this rock, as you've said so many times, David, before we work on the whole immortality thing. Because we're not going to stop fucking.
No.
I mean, really. That's just not going to happen.
It's not
going
to happen.
And we have so many of the religious right that say, no, condoms are the devil's work.
Condoms and birth control and have as many children as you possibly can.
We've even invented words like abortifacients, you know, just to combat this. It's so fantastic. I have no segue for that.
Yeah, I don't
I have no segue
whatsoever. With that statement.
Yeah. Our last story in science. Why are so many people nearsighted? Do you have a thought?
I would like to know the answer.
Do you have a thought on that? Apparently, 40% of the world's population, at least in the more developed world where we can actually track this, is nearsighted or needs glasses in some way.
And the vast majority of people who need glasses, something like more than 80%, I think it is, are nearsighted as opposed to farsighted. Farsightedness is extremely rare.
Right. So. Researchers have taken a look at this, and their current theory is that young people are simply spending too much time indoors. So our eyes are adapting to a world that is perhaps 20 feet away at most. And everything past that is, it can be fuzzy. It doesn't make any difference. You're never focusing beyond that point.
I have a problem with this theory.
Okay. What is your problem with this theory?
It's simply that evolution takes longer than that. We've been a primarily indoor society for maybe 100 years.
What about tents?
Yeah, but people were still farmers working outdoors and hunters working outdoors, and there's been a lot of outdoors time.
Well, there's also been a lot of indoor time. I mean, we cavemen, that was a thing.
I'm still highly, highly skeptical that evolution is moving that fast. Because, I mean, we've been tracking people getting shorter, but that's been over thousands of years. We've been tracking our mouths getting smaller and our wisdom teeth disappearing. But again, that's been over thousands of years.
Well, just a correction on that, people getting taller.
Well, yeah, that's.
Yeah, people have not been getting shorter.
People getting taller. People were shorter back in the day.
Right.
Yeah.
Studies among twins in the 1960s showed researchers that DNA influences nearsightedness, but information from as far back as 400 years ago indicated that genes weren't the whole story. Astronomer Johannes Kepler thought of his own poor vision stemmed from keeping his nose in a book for so many years. More recent research has corroborated Kepler's hypothesis. The rise in myopia syncs up with a stronger emphasis on education, especially in East Asia. In China, almost 90% of teenagers and young adults are nearsighted. Damn. 90% of teenagers and young adults, compared to 10 or 20% only 60 years ago.
That's insanity.
Those are some numbers.
Yeah.
Especially when we're dealing with China. I mean, that's a huge population segment. And it's no coincidence that the average 15-year-old in Shanghai spends 14 hours per week doing homework. Wow. I would like to indicate that here in the United States, we suck at education, and we really need to do something about that.
Super bad.
Yeah. We're falling so far behind. Far behind.
And isn't there somebody who's, trying to get a presidential bid who wants to just abolish the Department of Education entirely?
Yes, I think that would be anybody in the Republican Party at this moment.
Yeah, well, I know. Well, didn't Rick Perry want to abolish the Department of Education and the Department of Energy? And what was the third one? Oops.
The EPA.
EPA, yeah.
I thought it was just oops.
Oops,
I forgot the third one.
Oh, that's right. Yes. He could not remember the third one that he wanted to do in a debate. That was hilarious.
And he let the other candidates tell him which ones he wanted to abolish. And they were just offering various departments just a la carte.
It's like, how about this one? How about this one? How about this one, you freaking idiot? Yeah, it's just fantastic. So
now he's wearing glasses, so maybe those will help him remember.
Yeah, his smart specs. Yeah.
Smart specs.
No.
I think that we can pretty much all agree that the reason Rick Perry is wearing those glasses is not because he spent too much time doing homework.
I think they're safety glasses so that he doesn't get something in his eye when they start throwing things at him. Yeah.
That well, there's there might be hope for his vision, if maybe not his political career. Yeah. But 6 years later in this article, it says 6 years ago they were able to correct a spider monkey's congenital color blindness in their lab by delivering new genes to the retina.
Yeah,
they added an extra color receptor cone to the retina of the monkeys who had been colorblind since birth.
Now there is something to be said about gene therapy and eyeballs. Because as science has worked on gene therapy, genes are, if you try to do gene therapy in like your hand or any other organ in the body, it's going to spread to the rest of the body. Cause that's what it does. However, the eyeball is a unique ecosystem in your own body. So what happens in the eye stays in the eye, apparently. So they can.
So your eye is the biggest of your body.
It pretty much is. Yes. And You do see an awful lot with it. Yeah. So.
Be careful what you get in your eye. It's going to stay there.
Yeah, exactly. So they can do these gene treatments with the eyes and really experiment and see what happens, which is why they're able to do such extraordinary things. So there's a lot that I'm a very visual person. I really value my eyes. So anything that we can do to make them better over the long term, I'm a big fan of that. Yeah. I will be one of those people that signs up and says, okay, yes, I have a, I can get a better eyeball. Yes. Go ahead. Please do that. Go ahead and hook it up to the neural net somewhere, you know, then I'll just feed all my Twitter traffic directly there. It'll be great.
Nice.
So I think that there is something just based on those numbers about, you know, the inside and just study. I know that both my sister and I needed glasses much earlier than our parents, just because we were dealing with computers more often than not. So I don't know. It obviously bears more research and more grants. Why are we not funding this?
Why are we not funding this?
Because Jesus.
Oh. Yeah.
Right?
Pretty much.
Fucking retarded.
All right. So, on to politics. Sort of. Everything else has a politics flavor vibe, really.
You can politicize anything.
Everything is politicized.
Yeah. You know, believe it or not, the show didn't start out as a simple political platform, you know.
It really didn't. It was really easy to talk about.
No, it's just as we start to dig into it, everything has political flavor text on it.
Yes.
Just everything. Yes. And then if you keep digging, the politics have a religious flavor text on them.
Or anti-religious.
It's still religious, faith-based, something or other, you know, that there's a moral justification that came from somewhere about all these things. I don't know that there's any moral justification for taking over Tatooine. I just don't know.
I'm surprised it took them this long to get to Tatooine.
What we're talking about is the political organization known as Islamic State, formerly as ISIL, formerly as ISIS, has taken over the movie set where Tatooine was filmed, which is located 60 miles west of the Libyan border. It's mostly just look, they're ruining something geeks love. Geeks, sick them. Somehow. I don't know.
I'm surprised it wasn't a bigger deal that they had to go to the desert and destroy this affront to their reality versus the museums.
The whole museum smashing and, you know, cultural antiquities being destroyed still bothers me to my core.
The reason that they do that is because they find offensive any element of culture which is not specifically and expressly Muslim. Not Muslim, Muslim extremist.
Yes.
Fundamental Muslim extremist. That's their entire purpose for being is to destroy anything that's not that. And they take that very seriously, and they have been ruining a great number of museums and sites and archaeological digs and whatever they can take over and take a pickaxe to or a sledgehammer to, they wish to destroy.
Yeah,
it reminds me a lot of some of the rhetoric of the evangelical Christian right, which when I was growing up, I heard a lot of that said, find anything in your life that does not directly glorify God and get rid of it.
Yep.
Destroy it. If it does not have to do with God, then it is earthly and worldly. And if something is worldly, then it is of Satan. And what do we do with something that is of Satan? So you have, you know, these 6,000-year-old ruins, and they look at that and they say, this has nothing to do with our modern incarnation of what we call God. So we have to get rid of it. We have to destroy it. And that's what they do. And the Star Wars set in Tunisia is to them no different than the ancient ancient Assyrian ruins. Is it Assyrian or Sumerian? I'm not sure which one, but those pictures that everybody saw, no difference for them between those two.
Of course, for true Star Wars fans, there is no difference for them either. they're equally revered.
So. Yes, that's true.
So, you know, I can see the point. I look at these organizations and I think that they're just going to be a flash in the pan and eventually they'll burn themselves out or burn out the rest of the region to where they, you know, flash back on them.
Eventually they're just going to piss someone off who's not a wuss and is going to hit back. And then they're going to get smushed.
Yeah, the Middle East is such an interesting region to try and really get a read on which way they'll go.
Giant mass of clusterfuckery.
Yes.
That's my official stance on the Middle East. It is a gigantic mass, a writhing, living mass of clusterfuckery.
I don't really see Islamic State going anywhere but up at this point. They are a hyper-fundamentalistic organization that is faith-driven, that is calling back to a lot of the old historical elements of the caliphate and the Muslims who swept the world after after the Crusades. And I really don't see – I've always compared
– It's like going back to your roots.
Muslim fundamentalists and their desire, and where the religions are right now in terms of the number of years that they've been around. You take what's the oldest, largest religion that you can go for right now. Let's say
Judaism.
Judaism, yes, Judaism. How many thousands and thousands and thousands of years old is that? During its height, yeah, it occupied as a kingdom. Much of its adherents occupied a large quantity of the Levant, and then it kind of mellowed out over another 1,000 years, underwent a bunch of occupations. And now if you talk to somebody who's Jewish, most Jewish people that you talk to, I don't think I've ever met a fundamentalist Jew in my life. I know there are some Orthodox and some Zionist, certainly, but by and large, if somebody tells you, I'm going to do this because Yahweh tells me to, you know, you'll never bump into a Jewish suicide bomber or a Jew who says, we're going to take over and bomb these countries because God wills it. There's a different reason, different rationale, very nationalistic if you want to talk Israel and some of the other stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not as faith-based as it happens to be. If you look at Christianity is slightly old, you know, slightly younger than Judaism. Mm-hmm. Christianity had its prime fundamentalist, bloodthirsty, drench him in blood, Deus Vult, God wills it kind of day.
Yeah,
in the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
Crusades and everything. Islam right now is going through that phase, that terrible teens, as it were, phase where they are bloodthirsty and, you know, just they're more apt towards fundamentalist thought. And it's much harder to temper and to moderate. Because they haven't gone through the Inquisition. They haven't been through sequences of occupation over the millennia that the other religions have.
Well, yeah, they've been occupying forces more so.
Yeah, but you raise a good point. You know, we've seen this pattern of behavior before, and correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't this pattern of behavior despicable? Doesn't everyone look back at the Crusades and the Inquisition and say, look at what a terrible time that was, and the church needs to apologize for that?
Now.
So if we're seeing that evolving in this religion right now, why aren't people stopping it?
Because it's difficult. It's a kind of a bubble effect for religious culture overall.
Well,
you know, it's not their history of being occupier and then the occupied. It's not their history of having these horrible things done to them and by them. They're creating that history now. But, you know, we're talking about Christianity, you know, ripped people to shreds for being heretics.
Let me give you a microcosm here in the United States. There are two large religious sects. In the North, you have Catholicism. In the South, you have Baptists and Pentecostals and Evangelicals. Essentially, the Luther branch branched out.
Evangelical Protestantism, yes.
Yeah, the Protestantism. In the South, you will notice, is more fundamentalist. The South gravitates towards more conservative, more faith-based, more fundamentalist approaches in nearly everything. The North, considerably more progressive, considerably more rationed and thought out, because it's mostly Catholic. For what's not atheist or agnostic, it's mostly Catholic. The Catholics have been around a lot longer and they've gone through that growth spurt. They've gone through that phase. They look back and say, if a priest or a pastor or something is going to tell them something that's deeply fundamental, if they're going to try to prompt some radicalism, the parishioners will look at that and say, no, that's a little much. We've been down that road before. Yeah. We've got a lot of history that we can look at. If you're going to talk to us about hunting down Satan in our community, yeah, we've got stakes that have, you know, we've burnt people at, and we kind of know where this one heads. But if you go to an evangelical church and you start listening to some of the fiery rhetoric coming from them, evangelicals have not had that lengthy 1,000-year history of burn them at the stake, dunk them in the pond, and prove she's not a witch. They haven't had that. So this is a microcosm of what's been going on. And I've noticed that locally, people here are – people in the Northeast, in New England, they are so much more moderate. Moderate. Even the fundamentals, even the Tea Party, everybody is more moderated.
You're saying moderate, but I'd like to try and substitute another word just to try and isolate that a little better. Would you call that
back?
No. Would you call that moderation being rational?
I would. Rational. There's a rational component that I believe is extended from the history of the faith and the majority of the people, you know, which faith the majority of the people up here adhere to. I've got some other theories about that as well that involve weather. I actually do. I think that
I think there's something to that. Yeah.
Seasons have a big deal to do with it. Up here, you're caught in this four season change that forces you to rethink the way that you view the world, because the world itself around you changes. Down south and across the equator, if you look, some of the places which have the most conservative, radical areas, the thoughts that come out of them are the most vile and irrational.
Stagnant.
Tend to be places stagnant. Exactly. Yeah. Stagnation. It's where the season never changes. It's where it's always the same. Year round, minor changes. Maybe a week or two, you might get some nice weather, but
always sunny in Philadelphia.
Never forget winter, Florida winter 2015, 211 to 212.
Yeah, when it got down to 30?
And everyone died.
Oh my God! Yes. Well, everybody lost their minds. Yeah. I'll give you that.
Lost their goddamn minds. Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm like, hey, no one else is going places. We should go do stuff.
Yeah, this is
gonna
be empty. Beautiful out. It's wonderful.
We don't have to deal with the goddamn crowds of humans.
Darn those humans. Always getting in the way. True. It's very, very true. So let's carry on with the political rhetoric, just a bit here. Now, the Affordable Care Act, as many of us have seen, you know, witness to, has actually helped an awful lot of people. I would say far more people have been helped than have been hurt by it. And
who has been hurt by it?
I know one guy who claims that it was just so detrimental to him. He's a small business owner. It's always the small business owners, by the way, almost every single time. And it was because he wanted to keep his shitty plan that was not up to snuff for the minimum regulations for the Affordable Care Plan. I don't know why he wanted to keep his lame-ass plan that was really not going to serve him very well if he actually got sick.
This screw seems, that guy. Seriously.
This seems to be a problem.
That person was part and parcel of the reason that emergency room care was, you know, generating such high costs that it does in the medical industry. If you had one of those catastrophic plans and that's all you had, chances are you weren't getting preventative care.
That's
you
correct.
Weren't seeking help with the frequency that you needed to. So, you know, I hear a lot about, oh, the small business owner. Well, you know, most people, the majority under 50 employees were not impacted.
I've heard, you know, the only, I don't know anyone personally who's actually suffered from this. I don't. And the only time I've ever heard of it is, again, small business owners complaining that it's costing them so much and it's so damaging to their business. And they inevitably use it as an attack against liberal politics when they're completely ignoring the fact that it is the conservative free market holy land that does the most damage to small businesses.
Consistently. Because It's amazing how those charts always line up, too.
Because what they want, as we've seen before, is a laissez-faire economy where private industry has absolute power and no regulation. And what happens when they do? They crush all the small businesses because why share the market if they don't have to? They want a monopoly so that they can set prices whatever they want and they don't have to produce shit because no one's competing. So to blame that on liberal to blame liberal politics for supposedly crushing the small business owner is lunacy.
There's also another factor on the state level that really we have a mutual friend. And at one point in time, I was assisting. I was kind of acting as one of those navigators or something to try to help this mutual friend acquire health insurance through the exchange. I had been very successful doing so for my brother, who has a litany of pre-existing conditions and does not make much money at all. Mm-hmm. But I was able to secure health insurance for him despite being a smoker and being paranoid schizophrenic and, you know, a host of problems. Was able to get insurance for him, and the insurance has worked out great. Oh my goodness. If he didn't have insurance, he would probably be dead right now. Actually, he would absolutely be dead right now. To try to find insurance for our mutual friend, we bumped into an issue. We filled out everything, got through to near the end, filled out everything, and then found out we discovered firsthand the gap that the Florida state legislature had built into the system in between Medicaid and what would qualify as a subsidy for Obamacare. So if you make too much money, you don't get the subsidy, right? That makes sense. Yeah. That makes absolute sense. If you make too much money, you can pay your own way, or your company should probably be providing you health insurance as a part of what you do for them.
Yeah.
If you make too little money, if you make a very, very small amount of money, you get Medicaid from the state of Florida, and they make you jump through a host of hoops. And it is one of the most brutal experiences you never want to go through. You wouldn't wish that on your worst enemy to be treated the way that they do with Medicaid.
Said, it's garbage because we're a red state.
It is.
Yeah.
That said, if you make too much money to qualify for Medicaid and you don't make enough money to qualify for Obamacare, the Obamacare subsidy, you fall within this gap along with at least 500,000 other people in the state of Florida.
It's a big gap, too.
It is a huge gap. It is somewhere between, I think it's $12,500 to $22,500. And if you fall in that
my
gap,
God,
which
that,
a great number of people do,
that number is not enough to live
out,
on. The number in there is simply not enough to live on unless you're
it's not
in
it's,
like
it's,
a house of five income earners
below poverty. But the problem is the ACA, Obamacare, designated that if you fall within that area, your state is absolutely supposed to extend Medicaid to you because you don't make enough money to survive, let alone be able to pay for health insurance. The problem is many states don't extend Medicaid that far. Florida opted not to extend Medicaid that far. So when you go to the exchange and you sign up, you might be led to believe, oh, wow, I make too much money for Obamacare and I don't make enough money for Obamacare. You would blame Obamacare and rather than the true culprits, which is the state legislature.
Right. Because you're having to go through the national health exchange.
Because the state legislatures, being conservative organizations, are going to hide the truth behind as much layers of bullshit as they can.
Yeah.
Because that's what they always do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They don't want you to realize that every conservative policy ever is out to kill the little blue collar worker, because it is.
The end of the day cost for our mutual friend would have been $300+ per month. At the end of the day, the cost for my brother, about $150 for a silver level plan. For that $300, that would have been a bronze level plan for our mutual friend. So it's really kind of sickening, and it makes me think that, you know, there's a, in politics, there is a saying, elections have consequences.
Yeah.
And I can tell you guys that looking at some of the budgets, anytime I look at the state budget for Florida, and I still do from time to time, even living in New Hampshire.
Are you a masochist?
I am a masochist, yes.
Must be.
That's the only thing that comes to mind. You must be a masochist.
Yes, I look at the state budget. I look at Manchester City budget. I look at budgets because I, you know, it's
budgets. B, it's political budgets. Budgets in states you don't live in anymore.
What I mean to say is that there's a body count associated with those budgets. People who fall within that gap and can't get insurance and get sick die. They just pretty much die.
Well, isn't that the Republican plan? That's what they're going to
do. That's the classic Grayson quote there.
Yeah, die and die quickly. That's the Republican healthcare plan that they're going to replace the Affordable Care Act with.
A lot of their voting membership comes from those lower pay scales.
Almost all of their voting membership comes from those lower pay scales. Either that or the extremely high.
You know what? This reminds me of something. Viruses that are ineffective at, you know, continuing in the environment are those that kill their hosts too quickly.
Yeah.
I think that the GOP is possibly veering towards the kill the host too quickly.
Well, we've covered this before, that increasingly in lower age brackets are increasingly liberal.
Yeah.
And the higher age brackets, which are in increasingly conservative, they're all dying off.
Yeah. Baby boomers are their bread and butter.
And they're all dying.
Which
they're going to be gone soon.
Thankfully, it means that statistically it is highly unlikely that the Republicans will ever win another presidential election.
Yeah.
The one they're most likely to win in, like, I think the next, like, five projected elections is the next one, simply because they still have the numbers to pull
and
it off.
And that's not going to happen. There is no electoral math that can get any current, any one of the current top 12 to 14 potential.
Yeah,
they've got
no strong candidate. Yeah.
None. And I'll tell you what's going to happen. There will be someone that they find. The RNC folks are going to go hunting, and they are going to find somebody who has almost no history. They're going to find someone with no controversial opinions, and they are going to anoint that sucker as the leader of, they are just going to steamroll through the primaries, and they're going to tell all of their state people, this is who you're voting for, and this is who you're telling your people to vote for, because if you don't, we're going to lose forever and ever, amen. If they're not able to do that, if they're not able to get the crap together in time, they're going to end up with one of these top 10 clown car people who will lead them to a precipitous electoral wipeout, the likes of which we have not seen in our generation, at least.
Yeah, so not in our generation.
That's exciting. I love the concept.
Now,
it's super exciting. It's like there is nothing you can look at a Republican right now and tell them there is nothing that you can do. It is inevitable that you will lose.
even with all of the ridiculous amounts of gerrymandering they do and all this nonsense and all of their voter suppression tactics, which are failing in increasing numbers as the elections get closer and closer, they're just – it is a losing trend for them, which is fantastic. Yeah. I would love to see a landslide election in my lifetime, and I would love for it to be
Next one promises to be the biggest landslide. I mean, Ted Cruz is currently projected to lose versus Hillary by a margin of 25%.
Now,
25?
Yeah. Now, hang on. Hold on.
25% of the popular vote.
Hold on. I was going in one direction with this, but we will we'll circle back around to that story because this is a better angle. No, this is a better angle because we're already talking about it, but we will come back to the Affordable Care Act and an alternative that has been coming up. But right now, let's talk about Mr. Ted Cruz. Because
this fucking guy.
Because
I want.
I have a thought.
He's so adorable to watch.
He is an amazing waste of flesh.
He's like, oh, look at you. You're so cute in your ignorance.
He's beyond ignorant.
I can't hate him.
He's well beyond ignorant. No, I could kick this puppy. I'm pretty sure. but only because I know where he comes from, because he is the shadow of his father, and his father, Rafael Cruz, is a Dominionist, the most evangelical style preacher that you could imagine. And that is the kind of faith-based government that Mr. Ted Cruz wants to inflict upon the United States and probably the world if he had his druthers about it. Now, with that, he is such a nut job and an absolute mental case about Dr. Seuss, for instance. Anybody that can go up and filibuster by saying green eggs and ham about the Affordable Care Act, which is an allegory for try it, you might like it, is a fucking idiot on every level. But he keeps sounding a little bit like Dr. Seuss's rhymes in the things that he says. Like recently, something that he was saying, you know, when he was announcing his presidential bid here, he sounded very much like, you know, like Horton, such and such as, you know, an elephant's faithful 100%. Yeah, it basically that was exactly the cadence of which he unleashed his campaign. And it's so laughable because I don't think that this little Tea Party darling that, you know, he has been brought up as is controllable by the GOP at large.
No.
He is a loose cannon.
They've been trying to wrangle him for years and they can't do it.
He is an absolute loose cannon.
Out of his damn mind.
And the fact that he's in there at all destroys any possible presidential bid that any GOP candidate could possibly have. Because he's just going to.
It shows how desperate they are.
Yeah. Just him being there is shredding the whole party.
Yeah.
His references to green eggs and ham, his references to Dr. Seuss's rhymes, in speech and cadence, remind me a lot of Herman Cain's quoting Pokemon theme song.
Right.
Continual reference to SimCity. 999 and just,
oh my god, so contrite.
Well, with his, you were saying the whole green eggs and ham thing. I always that to me reminds me of what was his name? He was a VP candidate, Paul Ryan, the guy who loved Rage Against the Machine. Which, if you actually know anything about Rage Against the Machine, you know they are the most liberal band on the face of the earth.
They're all liberal bands.
They're all liberal. Yeah.
If it's a band, it's liberal.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
Okay. But, I mean, they've got a song that condemns the genocide of Native Americans. They've got one that is, comparing American capitalists to imperialists.
I think really all he was going with was the title of the band, Rage Against the Machine, as some sort of Ayn Rand allegory for libertarianism.
Which,
you know,
is entirely wrong.
Which means that he never actually listened to a single song.
Yeah.
And he's just trying to
what he wanted in it. But there's another aspect to the Cruz announcement that I'm sure is rubbing the Republican establishment wrong. And that's the timing. It's March. It's March.
Mm-hmm.
No one of import has announced their candidacy for anything.
Right.
Yep.
You don't do that yet, because if you do that, you paint a gigantic target on yourself for the media, and they spend unusual, inordinate amounts of time digging through it. When you're a presidential candidate, you don't just get the congressional opposition research digging. You get the national, all of the Associated Reporters and all of Reuters and everybody who wants to make a name for themselves writing a blog is going to go hunting through everything you've ever said or thought.
Yeah.
And they will publish it. So
now, the only,
this is why you're not going to hear from that mystery Republican candidate until like 6 to 8 months before the actual election.
Which is the other side of the coin, where he could be shredding the party, or he could simply be the initial opening gambit sacrificial lamb, where he's going to occupy so much of the news cycle, knowing that he's already stirred up the birther movement because of his actual birth in Canada and dual citizenship debacle that he was doing. You know,
yeah,
with all that.
But haven't they done that before and it backfired on them? Because the first candidate to announce his candidacy, it colors the entire party platform.
Yes.
And that's going to look really bad for them in the end.
Not necessarily. What they could be doing, I put this out on Facebook earlier, I think it was earlier this week or last week. I said it could very well be a meticulous ploy by the Republican National Committee to put out the most radical nut job, the craziest Tea Party lunatic as the first flush to say, here's this candidate. Look what we come up with next. The next one, you could put Sarah Palin up against Ted Cruz and make her look like something slightly in the middle. You know, drawing a contrast between Ted Cruz. If you look at where 538 did an analysis of where Ted Cruz is on the political scale, as far as conservative versus liberal, he's further to the right of anyone that has been on the political scene for a long, long time.
Yeah. He definitely speaks to a very narrow demographic at this point. Yeah.
So you put
about 10%.
The next person you put up is going to look far more centrist as a result of Ted Cruz sucking up all of the media air right now.
Yeah. Speaking of one of the things that he's sucking up in the media air, one of our stories was Ted Cruz compares himself to Galileo. New language for climate change skeptics. David, I believe you found this one.
I did find this. This came across my Facebook feed.
Go ahead.
He's come out with language. Let me find the quote here. Today, the global warming alarmists are the equivalent of the flat earthers. It used to be that it is accepted scientific wisdom the earth is flat, and this heretic named Galileo was branded a denier.
No.
Science told us the earth was round. Religion told us the earth was flat.
And I would like to point out that the Catholic Church has since acknowledged that, our persecution of him is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like – it's the official platform of the Catholic Church that, the earth's not the center of the universe. And we're not – and while they're not totally on board with the whole evolution
thing, they are.
That it is a possibility.
They are, actually.
Things like that.
They are, actually.
Well,
the Vatican – the Vatican is down with it. Other dioceses – maybe. but remember, our new hippie pope is too liberal for
Fox News.
The Catholic Pope is too liberal for the GOP.
Yes.
Which is hilarious.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I just can't. I can never get over that.
It's just so much.
Seeing Fox News attempt to skewer the Pope as being part of a liberal plot was entertaining, to say the least.
Kind of a liberal conspiracy now.
It's the Pope. It's, yeah.
The Pope. I guess you never read about the infallibility doctrine.
I think some of the Vatican hasn't even read that because of how much they've been trying to silence the hippie Pope. So you can't silence hippie Pope. Hippie Pope don't care. Hippie Pope gonna do what hippie Pope wants.
I'm really surprised some of those cardinals haven't gone all Borgia on him yet.
I think there might be stirrings of that, but you know, he's too light.
That's probably why he announced he might be retiring soon.
Did he?
Did you see that? Yes, he said that the previous Pope, Pope Benedict, had set a precedent about retiring from papal duties early, and that he would consider it. He thinks he has asserted that one should probably not be Pope for life. So we may see another year or two of hippie Pope, but he has indicated that he is open to retiring.
You know,
which could be because the cardinals are looking to Borgia him.
Yeah. Now, if only we could get the Supreme Court justices to do that a little more regularly. That would be good.
Oh God,
that would be good. Which by the way, for our listeners out there, all maybe 100 of you, if you do not vote for whatever the Democratic candidate is, just remember that it will be one of these arch-conservative people, like Mr. Ted Cruz, probably filling about 4 spaces on the Supreme Court in the coming years.
This is why I argue in favor of Hillary so much. I hear so much from my progressive friends, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, anybody but Hillary. I don't care. Hillary will win. If Hillary runs, Hillary will win.
She just has to sign her name and show up.
There are so many Supreme Court justices are up for grabs during the next 8 years. During the next 4 to 8 years of whoever is president. You can't screw around with that. You can't have a Nader in there. You just can't. You just can't. There's too much at stake.
Yeah, this is not the election to do that with. Definitely not the election to do that with. Don't mess around. And really, she's got the numbers. All she has to do is not kill anybody and commit a giant felony to obliviate her entire candidacy.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't see what the fucking love affair is with her. I don't think she's particularly personable, and I don't like her as a candidate. But I'll probably end up voting for her just because, on the whole, looking at the whole political spectrum, she's the smartest move. You know, I don't personally like her.
I think she's come a long way in the past few years under. I guess under Obama's tutelage.
No. I gotta stop you right there. That is not the way that has
run. That is not true.
Okay. Hang on. But before you go on your tirade, I just have one thing to add. We have things that I never necessarily thought I'd see in my lifetime. A black president. And now the very real and likely option of having a female president. Right on his heels. Oh my God. This is going to make the entire religious right and the arch conservatives and in all of the Bible belts all around, because obviously we have so many buckles on the Bible belt, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's going to make all of their heads explode. Hopefully they'll just leave. But
JetBlue did offer that option on the last election. Free one-way ticket to wherever, and you had to sign up in advance and say who your preferred candidate was, and they would raffle off one free one-way ticket anywhere in the world you wanted to go that wasn't the United States.
It's a beautiful thing. I hope they do it again. Okay, go ahead, Joe. I just wanted to point out the deliciousness of that.
President Obama has been under the tutelage of Mr. Harry Reid, and his interactions with the Clintons have been distant. They have been colleagues, but they are certainly not mentor, tutor, that they are not that close and that collegiate. With Hillary, Hillary is considerably more experienced, more, she has unbelievable amounts of political capital. And she's a lot more progressive than everyone gives her credit for. You have to remember Hillary was at the forefront of the gay rights issue back mm-hmm. when not a single candidate, Obama included, was willing to, you know, evolve on the issue.
Right.
She
yeah.
was the, she was the figurehead. She was the person in front of everything. She was the one who was sitting in the congressional hearings trying to argue in favor of universal health care before anybody knew what the fuck it was.
Yeah.
And the Republicans, they took her and vivisected her in front of everyone. And I remember the jokes about the pantsuits and what's yeah. the Hillary bucket at KFC, two left wings and two fatty thighs. You know, the whole,
I remember
the
that. Whole, that was funny.
The whole thing, she has taken it on funny. The nose for a very, very long time. And she's developed an immunity to scandal now. And she's yeah. considerably more progressive than any of the other candidates, apart from, you know, Warren and Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, I love everything about Bernie Sanders. Yeah. And I swear to God, he's got to be in the debates because holy crap, that guy is awesome. He just proposed a millionaire tax, a war tax on millionaires. The guy is glorious and I love him to bits. Elizabeth Warren is also the best anti-Wall Street fighter up there. She's on point with the interest rates for student loans and how much we're loaning to the banks and all that. Elizabeth Warren is not somebody that's known outside of Massachusetts and New England and progressive circles. Bernie Sanders is not known outside of Vermont for the most part, apart from the, you know, the extremely aware, extremely attentive progressives. And he wouldn't be able to do the brutal national campaign slog fest that's required to win.
Yeah,
Hillary is the best bet by far, and I cannot wait.
Yeah.
For her.
Especially since she's not doing another job right now.
Yes.
Campaigning would be her job. 100%. And I think that would give her an edge regardless. And really, I adore Bernie and I revere Elizabeth Warren. I think that those two are just, if I could somehow meld them and have them do a fusion.
Yes. And you take them together into one entity.
Who's on
Sanders that would be,
and Warren.
Yeah, that would
who's
be the ultimate.
Who's the guy from Florida?
Oh, Grayson? Alan Grayson?
Alan Grayson.
Yeah.
He can't run for president. He needs to be senator first. And it's yeah. possible that Rubio's going to move on. And if he does, I know, the other guy who's, put in for a bid. Ian Whitney, I think is his name. Is this, or it's
Whitney does sound familiar, but I'm not positive.
There's an Irish guy. I've met him and I've spoken to him at length and I'm really ashamed that I can't remember his name right now, but he's running as well. And he'll be up against Grayson on the Democratic side for the nomination for Senate. There's also Jeff Atwater who will absolutely win the Republican nomination in Florida for Senate. And if it's Atwater versus Grayson, then Grayson's going to lose by one or 2 points.
Yeah, not by much.
Which
but
sucks.
And all because of gerrymandering, basically.
Well, gerrymandering wouldn't apply in a Senate race because the entire state can vote.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
And in a 2016 race, we'd have most of our guys out. The problem with Atwater and some of the Republican potential nominees in their primary would be, Atwater has just this tremendous political infrastructure. He's got a billion favors with a billion people in the state of Florida. And Grayson, as lovable as he is, offends a lot of people.
He does.
Grayson does not have the support in the middle at all. He is a fiery, fiery bastard, that man. I love him to bits.
Yeah. But I think that these people, they are our arch liberals, you know.
Yeah.
They kind of need to be right where they are.
Yes.
You know, come on. Bernie's the senior member on the budget committee.
Yeah.
We need him right the fuck there. You know, I played a long clip of him, you know, just eviscerating the GOP budget last week, you know, perfectly. You know, it was perfectly stated.
There was a joke. I think it was last week. What I saw Bernie Sanders' announcement. It was one of his announcements that he was attacking the top 10 corporations that are pulling in tax subsidies, not paying a dime in taxes. I swear to God, I half expected a bunch of little like laser dots. Like sniper laser dots to just like Bernie, please, you know, take it down a few notches. Just laser dots hovering over his heart and his head. And
don't take it down notches. I know. This needs to be said. These people need to be called out on their bullshit.
They do. Yeah. They absolutely do. And I feel the same way about Elizabeth Warren. I'm waiting to see those dots on her. You know, in the same way. I mean, she's fighting Wall Street.
Yes.
God's Wall Street. They don't pay anything.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, we need them.
You're doing it well.
We need them right where they are.
We need more of that.
I would have no problem with them being in the debate, though, because
or being the vice president.
Oh, the conversations that they'll have.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And Hillary does need to be dragged a little bit to the left on a couple of things, especially Wall Street and financial reform and campaign reform.
I don't think she can for. One reason. She's already seen the playbook. You know how the candidate will have all that fire and then they'll get into office and then realize that they can't do shit because of the overwhelming burden? She's already seen behind the veil. She was the first lady for 8 years. She already has better than top secret clearance on everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of all the positions that she's held, she already knows what's possible and she already knows what she can't do. So she's,
which is another reason that she's probably our best choice. Even though, again, I don't personally like her, she's our best shot because she already knows the game.
Yeah. And the guys here around this microphone and table here, we're not playing a favorites game. We're playing the who's the best fucking for the job.
Yep.
Well, the bottom line is the GOP has spent literally decades throwing darts at Hillary now, and they're running out of darts to throw.
Yeah, and with all the ammunition that
they have blown their scandal wad on Hillary,
and she's still
18
around.
18 months from now, when it's election time, they're going to have no ace in the hole. They've got nothing. They've held nothing.
She's still around. She's still popular. It doesn't seem like there's anything they can do to destroy her, even with the. I mean, I would have thought when I first heard that she was – granted, this was back when I was leaning towards conservative because I was a kid and I was an idiot.
Because you were raised that way.
Because I was raised that way.
That's what happens.
And then I got out in the real world and realized that Republicans are assholes.
Yeah.
But back when I first heard that she was, you know, making a move for senator and getting into politics, I thought, how the fuck are you ever going to get elected? You're after what Bill did, I thought that – you know, the whole Clinton scandal had permanently tarnished her reputation in my eyes. And all the conservatives I talked to felt the same way. And yet here she is, having been a senator and now running for president. Yeah. They can't fucking destroy her. It's fantastic.
No. Yeah. She is the T-1000 of political candidates at this point.
She's the T-1 million. She cannot be destroyed.
Horrible Universal stage show. Show at Universal is terrible.
That was pretty bad. No, I'll just go back to the T-1000. No, she's liquid metal. She'll just, you know, actually, I think I've seen a clip, like some comedy sketch where they did have her be the T-1000. Where literally it was liquid metal, you know, somebody shot her in the face or something. Is that all you got? You know, something like that. So fantastic stuff. So there's a couple other things specifically that I wanted Joe's attention on. And that would be Oregon being the first state to automatically register voters. What do you think about that?
I think that Oregon is not going to have any more Republican representation ever.
I certainly hope so.
I think that automatic registration, you know, it was actually Bill Clinton, under Bill Clinton's watch, that The program was initiated called Motor Voter Program.
Yes.
I don't know if you're familiar with that. That's where when you sign up to get a license, a driver's license, they register you to vote right there.
Yeah.
You know, and you have the option to sign up to vote, and it's kind of like part of the process. It registered tons and tons of new people, tons and tons of people, especially young people who were getting their license for the first time. Republicans hated it. They despised it.
Well, Shocking. Of course they hate it. They don't want people registering to vote because the hard part is registering. Once people are registered, and I found that this out, again, as being a young person coming into voting age, that the big block was registering. Once I'm registered to vote, it's fucking easy. I just have to get up early for one day a year.
You don't even have to do that. You live in Florida. You don't even have to do that. You can register to vote absentee, which is actually the best way to vote because
No. See, because I'm a registered Democrat in a red state, my absentee votes get mysteriously lost.
Yes, they fucking do. They do not. If you were to vote provisional.
My absentee registration has been lost.
Now, what you can do
five
though?
Times.
What you can do is I mail it in.
Don't get an absentee ballot.
Well, hang on.
So you know what? I get up and I go vote in person. That way you can't fucking lose it. I got it in my hand. I'm putting it through the machine myself. Fuck you guys.
Well, that is.
I like your fire.
To avoid that. But the absentee ballot, I have always found when available is one of the best ways to vote because you can do it at your convenience and you can research your, like, there's no pressure because you're not at the actual polling place.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like when you get at the polling, when you get in the booth, I've noticed this and it's a horrible thing, but there's an experience and it's shared by everyone. You will get to someone on that ballot that you have no clue and you will vote based on how much you like the name or you will vote based on who appears first or who had how many signs that you saw on the way in. Candidates research ballot physics. It's a whole nother science.
There's a concept that goes along with this, and it's the same thing that happens when you're in the grocery store trying to figure out which of the 93 different salad dressings to buy. It's called analysis paralysis.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where there's just so many choices that your brain just kind of shuts down.
And picks the first one that jumps out at it.
It's decision fatigue.
Yeah.
Which is usually the first one on the list, which is why the Republican candidate always appears first.
The Republican candidate in Florida has appeared first for a great number of years now because they set the determining factor for who appears first on the list as what party affiliation was the last governor at the last election.
Yeah, and it's self-fulfilling.
They did that after the departure of Lawton Childs.
Yeah.
And it's been Republican at the top of the ballot every single time. But for Oregon, the automatic voter registration is one of the best things I've ever heard of. If we could do that here in New Hampshire, this was nuts. Here in New Hampshire, you can register at the polls the day of the election.
Wow.
I am not shitting you. I'm seriously not.
That would not fly in any red state.
Zach went and registered, I think it was the day of the election.
Oh, wow.
He didn't need ID. He did not need identification to do it. And he voted. And I was like, this is insane. This is the craziest thing.
Voter fraud and all these people trying to rig our elections.
There were a couple of precinct people I spoke to, and I spoke to the clerk at the city hall about this, and I wanted to know, how does this work? She said, No one is trying to scam, you know, the voting system here. No one, we would know, we would be able to tell, we would see it very plainly. We all know each other here. We know where you live because you got to sign the address book. We're going to look it up. We'll figure it out. In Florida, you have to bring your ID. You have to convince them. Your signature has to match. The signature on the voting roll has to match the signature on your voter registration card. And if your signatures have changed over a period of years, they can and will invalidate those signatures. Lori Scott, the supervisor of elections in Brevard County, I was very good friends with her. She's one of the best Republican elected officials I know. Very, very fair. She told me they were forced by law to throw out so many votes because the signatures simply did not match. Yeah. Candidates can make a full day of it to go into the supervisor of elections office and have voters disqualified from voting in the next election by challenging their address, challenging the spelling of their name, or challenging their signatures. It's not like that in New Hampshire, and it's probably not like that in Oregon now.
It's not like that in any blue state, because they want everyone to get out and vote, because they're the ones who actually look at the research from all of these big-name places who have said that voter fraud is not a thing. It's just not. We've studied elections for decades. It doesn't happen.
Yeah, what was it? It was, yes, there is some voter fraud. It is 0.0001. percent of the vote.
It's this tiny, tiny thing that Republicans use as a weapon to bludgeon down anybody they don't want to vote, because everyone that they're trying to exclude from voting is going to vote for the opposition. I remember watching the recount for the hanging Chad election. Which election was that nonsense? I don't even remember now. 2000. This was when I was conservative. Because I was still living under my parents' roof and I was a moron.
In a conservative household, that's just what happens. Yeah.
It's just what happens. But I was watching it, and every time, I still remember this, every time that someone was voting blue, every single time it was called into question, not a single one of those tickets was someone voting red. Every single fucking time they were voting blue. Because the dude sitting there looking at these ballots was fucking paid off and was throwing out Democrat votes. Well, they've been doing this for fucking ever.
Well, they don't even need to be paid off. Their ideology pays them in dividends.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot to be said for that.
The woman who ran that district, she ended up with some sort of promotion to another Kush GOP-led position.
Yeah, there might be some of that.
In the state.
Yeah.
And then it happened again in 2004 in Ohio.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
To answer your question, though, Andy, I think it's a wonderful idea. I think voter registration should be compulsory, automatic and compulsory.
Well, in a great number of first world countries that are way better off than we are, it is compulsory.
Yeah. Australia, for instance, has compulsory voting.
It's not just compulsory to register. It's compulsory to vote.
They should probably change the election day from the first Tuesday of November to a day that actually makes sense, like the first Saturday.
But they don't want to do that.
Make it a holiday.
Because then the blue-collar worker can go vote.
Elizabeth Warren wanted to declare the election day as a national holiday, which it should have always been.
Both Bernie and Elizabeth Warren want that. Now,
there was some bullshit from the right about, suddenly we're worshiping democracy and that's a crime isn't that their fucking banner in the GOP? Democracy is fucking holy?
Certainly one of them, yes. Yeah, that... It's one of their Ten Commandments.
The fundamentals and the Tea Party will tell you, we're not a democracy, we're a republic.
No, we're not.
We're a representative democracy.
The difference between representative and democracy and a republic is splitting fucking hairs.
It really is, yeah.
I would side with the republic on that. Because if we were a democracy, we would be...
Every vote counting.
The average voter, I gotta tell you guys, sometimes it's best that they don't vote.
Sometimes. And we do have a story about something very along that line that we'll get to.
I saw the note.
That we'll get to in a moment. but with, I had it a second ago. I hate it when my thoughts get up and run away. It happens.
Leave it a treat. Maybe it'll come back.
It might. So, tell you what. We'll just move on. Back to the Affordable Care Act. Apparently, there's some very religious folks out there that have decided that the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is just not for them. It's a bad thing. They don't want to be involved with it for one reason or another. They think it's going to be too expensive or something. So
they're told it's going to be too expensive.
Most often they're told by somebody, probably their parishioner of, their parish or something or whatever, that it's going to be that way, and then they don't even bother to check. There have been studies on this, and that actually has been a case. But what they're doing now is something that, you know, I'm not opposed to this, but it's essentially their own private insurance. And one of the examples is a company called MediShare, where it's it's basically an organization that collects the money, and then you submit a medical expense, and they pay it.
It's, they offer no guarantee of payment.
Right, and don't call it insurance because of that. But essentially, it's insurance. It's almost identical to the models that the Mormons would use.
It's either that or it's a huge fucking scam, and one day when they have enough money, the guys at the top are just going to walk out with all of it because, hey, there's no guarantee that we're going to pay you.
Yeah, the organization that runs MediShare is the Christian Care Ministry, and, well, they have it's a nonprofit, but they do have a CEO.
Why does that sound familiar?
Christian Care Ministry?
Yeah.
It's probably because it's been in the news. Uh-huh. I mean, that could only be the reason that we're even talking about it. I'm not sure about whether or not it's a grand idea. Of course, I'm an atheist, so I wouldn't be eligible anyway. But
they've got a location in Ogalle, Florida.
Yes. In fact, one of our close friends happens to be using one of these. I don't know which one, but he is using it. It's interesting, and of course there's the religious exemptions that they're primarily concerned with about, you know, the abortifacients and general IUDs, morning after pills, birth control in general, anything that is against the traditional faith that they have prescribed to.
I like the end quote for the family that signed up in this article. Mm-hmm. It was a challenge at first when we signed up. When you're signing papers that say, this is not insurance, you're stepping out on faith. But we use faith every day.
And there you go.
Yeah, you
Welcome
know, I have
the free market. Bend over.
Of all the people at this table, with the exception maybe of you, Joe, because we've never talked about this, but of all the people at this little round table, I am the strongest believer here in a higher power in one form or another. I have faith that there is a creator out there who is looking out for us. But I'm not going to stake my health insurance money on that, because that's just fucking stupid.
That's relying on people, not on anything else.
That's idiotic. I believe that if I break my arm one day that maybe it's because God had a plan for me to do so. I also believe that I should trust my health insurance to pay for the cast that I'm going to need.
I would, I am, to answer your question, Michael, I am Christian. However, I would not want to see health insurance mixed with religion.
No.
Or religion mixed with health insurance. I've been to a great number of churches in my life, and while I would be comfortable with them hosting a picnic or a pancake breakfast, I would not be cool with them setting up co-payments and co-insurance and figuring out what my deductible for the year should be. Not a good idea. That's just not a good idea. It's a chocolate and peanut butter kind of thing. Don't get my chocolate in the peanut butter sort of thing. Keep the religion out of the state. Keep the religion out of medicine and science if you can. Just, you know, I consider medicine part of science. You can keep the two separate and independent. They don't really need to.
They should be separate and independent.
I'm going to go out on a limb and disagree with you. Chocolate and peanut butter together is one of the best.
I was using the commercial, but there was actually a cell phone company that was marketing itself as the progressive cell phone company. I don't know
Credo
if you guys
Wireless.
Have seen this.
It's Credo what Wireless.
Credo Wireless, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Every time I see those advertisements, I say, you know what? I need a cell phone company. but I don't want my politics mixing in with this particular, with a service that I'm receiving. Yeah. I'm not going to go out of my way to hunt down a cell phone service company that has the ideology that I agree with, because the two have nothing to do with one another.
Yeah. So, also, it wasn't a very good deal.
Well, no, right. It really wasn't.
It wasn't a
good
deal.
So you don't, these are things that don't need to be mixed. You don't need to mix faith with, I mean, that's insurance copays.
That's kind of typically the thing when they say come to us because we're this ideology or that ideology versus come to us because we have this service or that service.
Yeah.
It tends to be kind of a screw job in general. And the only reason people go there is because they believe so much in this particular ideology that they don't care that they're paying more. They don't want to hear that they're paying more. They don't want to understand that they're getting raked over the coals and bent over a post.
But even with this Credo Mobile thing, which is, you know, I get the Credo Action newsletter, and I've, you know, signed many of their petitions, and they have brought things to my attention that have caused me to call my senator and all that stuff. And I think they're doing good work, but this cell phone service thing is a hair's breadth away from it. Just ideologically, it's the same principle as having a state-sponsored religion, which I think is wrong. So on principle, I can't support that because I don't want my government telling me what church I have to go to on Sunday, mostly because I don't go to one because I think it's a waste of time. But that's beside the point. Ideologically, it's so similar, I can't support it. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it sells. I understand why they do it because it moves product. You know, it gets people to sign up for service. Not everybody.
And it gets funding for the movement, you know?
It generates dollars. It doesn't necessarily make money for the movement. I don't believe that the people running these companies are that ideological. I think most of the time they're piranhas more than panda bears. And they found a way to make a buck off of people's ideology, and they're going to make their buck, and then they're going to go about and buy their Gulfstream spread the good word.
Even ideological organizations that you think are your support of is moving forward a movement may not be doing so. I'll give you two examples just
off the
top of my head.
That's why I don't give them any of my money.
Equality Florida, which David, you and I have spoken about and has been in the news lately, unfortunately, because of some of their endorsement processes.
Hmm.
Equality Florida, you can give a big pile of money to, and you'll never see a dime of it go to the actual efforts to change equality in Florida. Yeah. It pays for the most part for a few counties, but that's about it. Most of the work is done by local activists. It's a kind of a put up job. As much as I love the people who are involved in it and they endorse me and I love them and it's great and all that, and they have done good work in electing a couple of state representatives, by and large they rely on activists at a local level to actually push forward change, and their support to them is laughable. Act Blue, who you guys undoubtedly know as the massive fundraising beast that is out there.
Mm-hmm.
Act Blue gives just a very small amount of what they actually end up making to progressive candidates in the end of it. If you're going to donate to a progressive candidate or any candidate, don't do it through some third party.
No, do it directly.
Do it directly, because Act Blue takes a huge chunk and they charge that candidate through the nose. They charge a candidate who's running for Congress around about $10,000 to $20,000 just to set up the page.
Whoa.
Just the page alone.
Whoa.
And then take a whopping 10% off the top. So, yeah, it's severe. So, you know, any organization you want to support, or any candidate you want to support, any cause you want to support, go as direct as you humanly can.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it's put up jobs, a lot of it's organizational.
And it's not just politics too, which really makes me sad. I remember a couple of years ago, there was something about one of the big breast cancer movements. Maybe it was Susan G. Komen for the Cure. And somebody, you know, blew the lid off of that and found out that they were just flushing money down the toilet. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't actually going to cancer research.
So speaking of flushing money.
And now that organization is just falling apart. because of the backlash.
That's the vast majority of nonprofit organizations basically put forth a pittance of what they're getting in towards achieving the goals that they say they're for. They put some money at it, but for the most part, a lot of that money actually stays within the organization, which is sad. But it is what it is, you know. They're not a regulated market per se. The NFL is a nonprofit organization, and I wish the shit they do a whole lot more for our country than they fucking actually do.
Ass.
They, you know, what?
Wait, really? That's a nonprofit organization? The NFL
is a nonprofit. NFL is a nonprofit organization.
Yeah.
All of the money that they make off of football games for the entire year, in, up to and including the Super Bowl, is tax-free money.
It's a load of horseshit.
Wow.
Yeah. And they even charge the fucking entertainers to be part of the Super Bowl halftime show now. They don't pay them. Katy Perry didn't get paid. She paid the NFL to grace them with her presence.
Wow.
She paid for the publicity. Of course, speaking those guys can fucking afford it, but still just despicable.
Speaking of phenomenal wastes of money, what's the longest road trip you've ever taken?
I have driven from California to Virginia.
California to Virginia, so that's roughly 3,000 miles.
Yeah.
Maybe 2,800.
It's about 3,000.
That's a good one.
Coast to coast, yeah.
That's a pretty decent one. How about 12,978 miles?
Sweet. Who did that?
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Not miles. That's kilometers. Let me convert that. 8,064 miles.
Us heathens over here who still use the imperial system.
Yeah. 8,064 miles.
Sweet.
That is a theoretical drive from London to Alaska.
That's awesome.
Via a Moscow route along the Trans-Siberian Railway.
Nice.
The Ruskis, are proposing a rather fantastic idea of doing this Russian superhighway kind of thing along the existing tracks of, because obviously there's nothing else there, along the Trans-Siberian Railway, which runs 9,258 kilometers from Moscow to Vladivostok. Yeah, but they also want to get this. They want to do a bridge to Nome, Alaska, across the Berings.
So the bridge is the part.
That's why we're talking about this.
That's the hard part. That's the, you know, futuristic society, dystopian universe sort of how.
What's that body of water called? The Bering Sea? Is that
the Bering Strait.
Yeah.
The Bering Strait.
Bridge across that body of water, I would not be comfortable driving across, because I've watched The Deadliest Catch. I know what the weather's like out there. No thanks.
Technically, they're close enough to see land to land.
Yeah, but still, no thanks.
Shore to shore, but that can still be a distance of up to 60 miles, which is really long for a bridge.
It is a long way for a bridge.
I'd rather it be a tunnel.
Yeah, they do better with the friggin' gnomish tunnel.
Yeah.
Under the water, which, I mean.
Now, the longest bridge in the world.
Talking about. It's pretty deep there, as I understand it.
It is. And I believe it also crossed a tectonic plate.
Yes.
The world's longest bridge is the Danyang Kunshan Grand Bridge in China, part of the Beijing Shanghai High Speed Railway. The bridge, which opened in June 2001, spans 102 miles.
Damn. Okay.
So it can be done. It can be done. But this whole proposed enterprise would cost trillions of dollars, which in similar fashion to the way the GOP budget was, had said also that it'll all be taken care of with residuals. And didn't bother to actually indicate what those would be.
Yeah.
Or how that would happen.
There wouldn't be enough traffic.
There would never be enough traffic across that bridge to justify it.
Oh, it's not just the bridge. It's the entire road. Because right now, it's just the railway.
there's no reason to put, I mean, I, as much as I like the futurist idea of having roadways and, you know, quote unquote by land travel between the eastern and western hemispheres, there's no return on investment for this, because most of where you're traveling through the vast stretches of Siberia, through the steppes, through the bulk of Alaska and the Northwest Territories, there's nothing there. There's no humans there.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this would be for primarily for freight. And if so, if it's for freight,
you already
move freight via ocean at a dramatically reduced cost than it would take to go
to build and maintain this bridge.
Well, not only to build it, but just literally to put your freight on a freighter in the port of San Francisco or the port of Miami, and then send it around the continent to where it needs to go, would be cheaper than to have a semi tractor trailer drive.
Yeah.
North as far as it needs to go, and then west until it gets to London.
Yeah,
a lot of people don't understand that it's crazy cheap to do that. I mean, I was talking with the guy ages ago about, you know, why don't we ship everything by air now? It's like, well, you just don't, because it's so much faster. It's like, you just don't understand how air travel works. Mm-hmm. Every pound you lift is thousands of dollars that you got to pay for to get it in the air.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Putting it by sea takes longer, but I mean, when we moved from Virginia to Hawaii, it cost us more to get our stuff to the West Coast, to get it on the shipping containers, than it did to get it to the islands.
Yeah.
Yeah. This apparently is being proposed by the head of the Russian railway system.
He needs something for his people to do, I guess.
Well, it's interesting. The guy's name is Yakunin, which is a great name. And, you know, you might as well go ahead and get used to saying it, because he also is potentially the successor to Vladimir Putin.
Okay.
It's an interesting theory that he has. It is entirely useless.
Yes, it's
the only thing it would actually serve as is a new monument that maybe you could see from space. We'll have flying cars by the time this thing is fucking done.
I honestly hope we never have flying cars, because I've seen the way people drive.
Flying cars are going to be shortly after self-driving cars.
It has to be. It definitely has to be after self-driving cars.
And they will be multi-rotor. Machines. Essentially, they're going to be giant, like, quadcopters or hexacopters, but probably more along the lines of 16 blades instead of 4 or 6.
Something like that. Okay. So that's an interesting idea. We'll see if it actually goes anywhere, but I don't think that the trans-Eurasian belt system thing is ever really going to take off. And if they do, good luck. Good luck. I'd like to see it happen, but I don't think it will. And I think that really, that's, we're drawing to a close, and I know that Joe has to bug out here in a minute. Just rather quickly, Super Troopers 2. I think we remember Super Troopers 1. Apparently, the guys over at Broken Lizard have decided to make a sequel, and their crowdsourced, funding was successful in less than a day. At $2 million, and it's gone much higher than that. So you can definitely take a look at the link there. And then we're into Florida.
Florida.
And this is this
on the subject of Super Troopers 2.
Yes.
I had begged Zach not to back that. he is a diehard fan of Super Troopers. He has watched that film at least 100 times.
So how does he feel about Mexico?
You boys like Mexico?
He quotes the movie with great frequency and is super, 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 super excited about Super Troopers 2.
Well,
Mother God.
So there, that's it's going to be a thing, people. They got the money, so they're going to do something with it. Yeah. So a Florida man lets his girlfriend drive a patrol car to Hooters, causing questions about the validity of the maximum IQ for police. Now, you may have noticed that I did not say minimum IQ for police, because
this is something that, yeah, I like to bring this up a lot as well.
Yes. David, you brought this story to us. Please take it away.
Well, I'll tell you about the officer. He's Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. He's been in trouble before for making out with his girlfriend on or near his cruiser while on duty. apparently let her drive his cruiser to Hooters. Not sure why this occurred, but somebody filmed it and complained. And so now he's in trouble. Another day in Florida, keeping it classy.
Keep it classy, Florida. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But of course, then it's the, okay, so how smart can you be? Since there's a maximum IQ.
Maximum IQ.
In this age where we're having dramatic police violence against the citizenry that they are apparently serving, what is the rationale for having a maximum IQ?
The prevailing rationale is that if you're too smart, you'll get bored in the position and you'll quit.
So That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
The rationale is that they have a retention problem with smart people. And I don't think it has to do necessarily with them taking issue with the monotony.
It has everything to do with them taking issue with policies. Having lived with not just a cop, but a Florida cop, OPD officer for many, many years, the officer who shall remain nameless has gone on and on about how ridiculously convoluted and fucking stupid all the policies are. Whereas, and where he, a very smart individual himself, probably approaching that maximum IQ.
Oh, no, I'm sure that he's over it, actually.
He has told us of, you know, so many times where he has gone to his superiors and said, you know, there's a solution to this problem. We do this, this, and this, and it's done. And it's within the regulations. And it just doesn't happen. And it's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. So they go by the Wunderlich Cognitive Ability Test, and it's a popular group intelligence test used to assess the aptitude of prospective employees for learning and problem solving in a range of occupations. Many police forces throughout U.S. and Canada require candidates to take this test as one of the qualifications prior to being hired. The standard range of scores for police officers is between 20 and 27. A perfect score is 50.
Okay.
So the average score nationally for police officers is 21 to 22, the equivalent of an IQ of 104.
104?
104.
So they
let that kind of sink in.
104?
That's the maximum is 104. That means the majority of police officers are below average intelligence.
Fundamentally retarded.
Yeah, that's fucking stupid. Who thought that up?
Michael, you're getting a little.
No. He hasn't even begun.
That's the average score nationally for our police. That is the average score nationally for our police forces. Equivalent 21 to 22, or the equivalent IQ of 104.
Do these people not remember grade school? Do you not remember the part where the not so bright guy in class was the one beating everyone up because he was a bully? No wonder we've got so many fucking problems.
Yeah, actually, yes. the headline of this article is, ever wonder why cops yell quit resisting as they beat a person who's not resisting, or why they shoot people who pose no threat? Maybe the answer is right in front of us. With an IQ of 104, of course you can't quickly assess a situation and run all the variables in your mind. You probably have zip-side shoes because somebody else tied them.
Oh, jeez. Now, in theory, the 100 IQ is the average baseline. That's what the average intelligence is supposed to be. So really, the average person is the person with the badge. That's not necessarily a bad thing, because average people are fine. Really?
No, it is a bad thing because of the
I said not necessarily. I said not necessarily.
No, it is a bad thing because of the stresses of their job, because the amount of knowledge they have to retain, the amount of variables they have to keep track of in the field, the quick and rational decisions they have to make under pressure every day. They need to be smarter than the average bear to do this job. It's fucking idiotic to do it any other way.
My proposed solution is to specialize them, which, you know, looking at what cops do on a daily basis, you know, anybody would have difficulty with the amount of shit that they have to know to do on a daily basis. Just about anybody. I mean, the memory retention for all the laws that they have to enforce alone is obscene. And then they have to be able to accurately assess a situation which may turn violent very quickly, or deal with social situations that require a high level of EQ and alone require a lot of training to, you know, tone down a situation to a level that's acceptable or prevent it from reaching that threshold where it becomes a violent encounter. Those are skills and arts that take a lot of practice and take a lot of training and take a lot of time to master those skills. On top of everything else that they do, I think that they should be specialized. I think we need is like the cops are literally just to prevent people from killing each other or to act as a glorified bodyguard for quote unquote an agent who actually knows a certain set of laws that they specialize in, say over-the-road traffic or domestic violence calls, things of that nature, that they've got these group of skills that they know how to deal with, and the cop is only there to back them up and prevent them from getting killed should now, something violent occur.
They're three feet back
watching the situation.
I think that'll work when we move to a completely automated robot police force, which will probably happen at some point in our dystopian future.
Lower than 104 IQ, they're gonna be just fine.
Yeah, but they also won't have the attrition rates because they're just there to run the program. Now
you have 5 seconds to comply.
Thank you, Ed 209, very much.
After 5 seconds, we will no longer be having this conversation.
Now, I did something that I don't usually do, which was get up in the middle of a podcast and walk over to my bookshelf. This large tome is the Physician's Desk Reference Guide for 1998, edition 52. It has, just to look real quick here, 3,225 pages. Okay? It is the biggest book that I happen to own. This is what doctors use to figure out what medicines to give you. Do you possibly think that they have memorized all the interactions for all the medications that are on all 3,225 pages of this book?
No, of course not. But exactly. There's a difference now, between a scientist and a policeman. A scientist is required by his job to check the references.
However,
a police officer doesn't have time to check his goddamn references.
However, they typically don't. Hang on. It's our problem. It's not
that's
their
why they're
fucking problem.
By a Google machine.
It's our problem. Now, we are dealing with human beings here. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I have great respect for law enforcement officers because they are willing to actually put themselves in a position to be accosted, shot at, stabbed, verbally abused, physically abused in all manner of methodologies and practices. Whereas this guy right here is not. So I applaud them. I love our officers, and I would like you to continue to follow the serve and protect, that's usually printed on the side of your car. That's kind of important to me. I would like you to continue to do that. However, I understand that you are a human being and you have bad days and sometimes that bad things happen because of that. I understand. However, I also understand that doctors are also human beings and they can't remember everything. Just like we can't remember all the rules.
Even if they could, they're going to suffer the same levels of decision fatigue of everybody else.
Yes, they will. Absolutely. There's too many options. And of course, pharmaceutical reps are going to come in all the time and they're going to drop samples off and things like that.
And they're going to push their product.
Constantly. Yes. And
I have to scamper.
Okay.
It's been a pleasure, guys. Wish I could have made it to the end, but
no, it's no problem. Joe, do you have anything that you want to want to promote or send us to? Any picks or?
I'm not plugging anything.
Not anything. Okay.
I'm good to go.
All right. Thank you, Joe, for being a part of it.
Have a good one, guys. Thanks
right.
for having me. Later, dude.
So with the PDR, if you ask any nurse practitioner that or doctor, they have a list of things that they have experience with. That works. It's kind of their go-tos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. It's basically the short list. It would be what you'd have on your hotkey action bar if you happen to somehow be playing a physician, like a surgeon or a doctor, you know, in some MMO, which is a weird thought, but it's true.
The combat medic Bible, all five pages.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're experiencing pain, painkiller.
Yeah.
And your arm is broken, sling.
Right. And it's,
you are bleeding.
Insert generic non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug here at X milligrams. You know, there's so many options that you have to have a short list. And police, anyone in authority really, is going to have that short list because there's too much to remember. Now, we certainly hope that when they go back to their car after pulling you over and they're running all your information, that they might look up other things to see whether or not the law that they just, you know, accuse you of breaking is still valid. You know, we would like to hope that and that they're not playing Candy Crush on their cell phones or something in the back.
Yeah.
We want to hope that that's exactly what's going on. We don't know. And honestly, asking in the middle of such an event, would probably give you a bad time. So I'm not saying that you should either, but remember that these people are people. We do hold them to sometimes almost an unreasonable expectation of performance.
Well, I have to disagree on that because I look back at, I'm as another, a similar corollary to this discussion. I remember there was a big to do about some fire department. I think it was in California, of some women's rights activist group was well-intentioned but ultimately moronic in this, that they said that the entrance requirements for firemen was sexist and that it should be changed because one of the entrance requirements for firemen in this particular district was that you had to be able to do a fireman's carry. You have to be able to pick up an average-sized person, which is like 5'10", 180 pounds, and put them over your shoulders and carry them out of a burning building in full kit.
Yeah,
that's the requirement. You have to be able to do that. And because a great number of female candidates could not meet that standard, the standard was sexist. And so the standard became you have to be able to drag someone out by a burning building. You have to be able to drag a 185-10 person out of your burning building. How is that a good fucking idea? Let's ignoring the part where just by dragging someone out by their arms, you can dislocate their wrist, their shoulder, and everything in between and do enormous permanent damage to the muscles, ligaments, and tendons. You are dragging them through a burning building. That doesn't seem safe to me. And so while I am all for equality of the sexes, this is fucking stupid. I'm sorry, but if you can't meet that standard, you can't be a fireman. That has nothing to do with equality. It has everything to do with the fact that this is a high demand job.
Yeah.
And if you can't meet that standard, you can't do the job. We have to hold them to higher standards because they are first responders. And they need to be the best of the best.
And I think that's just a failure.
They were wrong in that instance. And it's just like, you know, I firmly believe that women can make great combat troops as long as they can meet all the physical requirements that job demands.
And I don't think that there's any physical requirement that someone cannot meet with enough effort.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't the all females could not do this. It was the a lot of them couldn't do this.
It's just a lot of them weren't up to the physical standards.
Right.
And that,
there are certainly some brawny women out there.
Your statement, though, is that not everyone can get up to those fitness standards. It's just as much as we want everyone to be identical and everyone to be equally capable of doing everything, it's just not true.
It's true. Not everyone can.
There's enough steroids that'll get you up to those standards.
Yeah, but we don't want to have people on the juice. You know, it's okay, but sometimes that childhood dream of racing into a burning building and saving family isn't in your cards.
It's just not.
It's just not going to happen for you.
Sometimes you have an IQ of 104 and you end up a cop.
Yes, indeed. Sometimes that happens.
And you don't get that astronaut position you're really after.
I'm sorry you're too smart to be a law enforcement officer. I'm sorry you're too dumb to be a law enforcement officer. Any of the above is possibly true.
You motherfucker, you're just right.
But you, yes. Yes, you there. I think that if the right candidate can do the job, you shouldn't water down the requirements of the job because then you're endangering safety for other people.
Yes.
You know, it goes along with my rights end where your rights begin.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want the person who has to carry me out of a burning building
to be able to carry as
physically strong as they possibly can be for a human being.
Yeah. There is a reason
to haul me over with another guy and be at a dead sprint hauling ass out of that building.
Mm-hmm. There is a reason why the firefighters have those awesome calendars for the ladies, you know, of all the
because
very,
those guys are ripped
of the ripped. Yeah. And that's awesome.
That's great.
That's great.
It's what we need.
Yeah.
It's what they need in order to fill that position. And it's not that women can't.
No.
You know, there are some women.
There
are women bodybuilders out there that will help you reach that goal.
But it's not even a bodybuilder thing. I remember during that whole debate that the opposition had a medical professional who looked at the requirements and looked at, you know, the amount of muscle mass you have to have and said, you know, this is within reach of the majority and something like more than 70% of the female population. These requirements are by no means discriminatory.
Yeah.
You just have to work hard to get that fit. But that's true of guys as well.
Yeah, there's going
to
be a percentage of guys.
To get that fit.
They're not lazing around in the fucking firehouse. Those guys are pumping iron. My brother was a volunteer firefighter and actually kind of admitted that he was on the juice for a while there. But to retain that level of physical fitness.
They work out constantly to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one thing that you're always going to find there. You're going to find fantastic food, and you're going to find some serious workout gear in addition to all the firefighting equipment. Because apparently the gun show, you know, is part of the firefighting equipment.
Yes.
It really is.
Yeah.
The first piece of the firefighter's kit is the firefighter himself.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's some heavy stuff. It is an enormous burden.
They've done a lot of work to make it lighter. But there's only so much that they can realistically do.
Well, you have to be, I think that the bigger requirement is, okay, you're going to hold that hose still.
Yeah. Having been a part of a firefighting team, not part of, you know, any volunteer fire department or anything like that, but just a firefighting team on a boat.
Mm-hmm.
Because every sailor is a firefighter. That's just the way Navy does things. From day one, you're trained to be a firefighter. That shit's hard.
Yeah.
The kit honestly ain't all that much. Once you've worn it a couple of times, you've gotten used to carrying that 20-30 pound tank on your back and all that nonsense. That's not the hard part. It's once the water starts flowing through the hose that's the hard part.
Yeah. Because then it becomes
why they have multiple guys on that hose.
Yeah, because then it becomes an uncontrollable beast. Yeah. It's physics. It's just physics. Yeah. I don't care how beefy you are. Once physics starts to unleash on you, you're going to have a problem.
It's going to suck. You're going to have a bad time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure and there's a lot of force and you need enough mass to control that force.
And you got to know when to brace yourself for that kind of thing. I was not a firefighter, but I did do, concrete work, you know, spraying super stucco 3 on things. Yeah, we're shooting concrete, very similar to the firefighters.
Similar
principle here, just a lot more viscous. And, dude, when that thing goes, oh my God.
it just takes off, doesn't it?
I bet that was a workout.
It would knock people senseless. Because if you lost control over it, it was fine to fall down. If you fall down, that's okay, just don't let go. Because if you let go,
it's going to start whipping around and beat the shit out of you.
And throwing concrete at people.
Yeah.
It's not a great idea. So, yes, props to all of our service personnel out there. You know, especially the good ones that are saying, I'm not one of those people. I'm not one of the idiots you're talking about.
Yeah, you know? I guess I should qualify many of my previous statements. This is not a problem of the officers.
No.
This is a problem of the people who set policy. The people who set policy are being fucking wrong about it. Officers, I always try to give officers the benefit of the doubt. And every time I see a stupid cop do something, I never say that the police force is to blame. I say that stupid cop is to blame. Unless it's something like Ferguson where you've got an entire organization that is completely fucking biased and it's completely fucking obvious.
Well, I think. Yeah. Just like I was talking about earlier with how I would, you know, modify our police forces to specialize in things. I think that there are existential or there are systemic issues with the way policing is run in this country. The mentality that is promoted, the brotherhood, quote unquote, that is promoted.
Yeah, we've talked about that.
The idea that you are something other than a human being, that you are something other than a citizen. You're not. You're a human being. You're a citizen. You make mistakes, and the rights that you are protecting and serving are your own as much as they are the people around you.
That's a great point that I think a lot of law enforcement officers do lose track of, is that these are the same rights as you and your family.
Yes. And part of the reason they lose track of it is the quote unquote fraternal order of police bro code. You don't snitch on your partner.
Yeah.
You don't snitch on fellow police. You don't write another cop a ticket ever. No.
Yeah, it is a bit.
Those are policies that should not exist. You are not a separate entity from the rest of civilization. You are not, you know, you serve an important function, but you are by no means the glue that holds us together from chaos. You're just this facet of our society.
Right. And we definitely know that they're not the glue that holds us together from chaos, from all the altercations that didn't happen in New York when they kind of just stopped policing.
Right.
Yeah.
When everything just was fine.
People naturally.
Big shocker, crime is actually falling.
Amazing.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. Of course, the statistic is that, well, of course the crime rate is falling because it's not being reported. Well, yeah, but there also weren't as many murders. I mean, there are other statistics that we can track, so just hold that argument until the end of time, please.
There are certain things about police work that, in the way that it is implemented currently, causes an increased amount of stress on the society that police force is operating in. And when you put people under stress, they do things they wouldn't normally do. Which is where some crime comes from, you know, by virtue of the fact, you know, one of the things they talked about in the Ferguson riots is, you know what, sometimes the best thing you can do for a situation is walk away from it, because your appearance in that situation can change the tone of that situation.
Yeah.
They showed up ready to party, and they got themselves a party. You throw a tear gas at enough people for long enough, and eventually they're going to throw some shit back.
Yeah, people are not going to just let you walk all over them. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. We're not wired that way. Eventually, we all snap. Everyone's got a breaking point.
Really, it's a testament to Ferguson. They went through nearly 90 continuous days of tear gas before that was largely unreported by our media for the assets before they rioted.
Yeah, and then they finally said enough's enough, and good on them, because they should have. It was bullshit.
Yeah.
It was bullshit, and it continues to be bullshit.
They lasted longer than I probably would have.
Yeah, you ain't kidding.
Now, I think it's time to wrap that story and go to the other O Florida story. Because, you know, sometimes you just have to draw a 20-mile penis over Florida.
I hope this plane was nicknamed the Woody.
Okay, so...
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yes. Flight Radar 24, which at Flight Radar 24, tweeted out an image from the flightradar24.com webpage of a flight that went out of Kissimmee and drew a dong with his flight path. Over,
it looks like he wasn't the only one trying.
I'm not sure. I think that was just a loop.
There's that other one. It's got a loop, and then it's got a long line of a loop. But it looks like he forgot the second loop at the bottom.
Yeah, kind of.
It only needs one more loop, and that sucker's a penis.
It's true. Yeah, it would have been two. More complete balls for that one. yeah, so I definitely recommend... if you would like to see what this enterprising pilot decided to do, please go over and check out our show notes at www.oreillyradio.com for episode 51. They're all there. Everything that we've talked about today, for the most part, is all there and will lead you down all the rabbit trails that that we ended up with. Yeah,
I like how they have the GIF image of the plane's actual flight path.
Yeah. Apparently, it says, it's very short, so I'll just read it. This is definitely a segment of flight school, right? You spend the first few months learning the plane's instruments, and then test flights, landings, emergency procedures, solo time, and then it's draw a giant dick. Juvenile? Sure. But let's lift this phallus artisan up for dedication to their craft. Joining such GPS wiener luminaries as Claire Wyckoff, the Nike Plus sausage runner.
I remember hearing about her. She runs penis patterns all over her city.
It's amazing. Complete with head.
The dedication is certainly impressive, especially for a guy who's, you know, he's gone through all of these hours and spent all this money on training to fly a goddamn airplane. And then what does he do with it? This.
Fly a penis pattern.
This, if this nothing is else, really it is a impressive. Testament to human will. Because this guy woke up one morning and said, this is what I'm going to do. I am going to dedicate all of this training and all of this work I have done to this.
You know, I think this Claire lady really does take the cake, though.
Oh, yeah. Her patterns are amazing.
This is amazeballs. I mean, quite literally.
Amazeballs.
Amazeballs. I mean, the first one, she went down enough side streets to make it hairy balls.
yes.
And the second one listed, yeah, just follow the links, people. Just follow the links. This is what happens. It's the internet. Just get over it. And
you have taken the red pill here, and here we show you how far down.
Yeah, and goes.
But you're on the internet. You know this is here. So just take a deep breath, accept it, move on.
Yeah, she ran 4.91 miles around Golden Gate Park, and had it ejaculate.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. I mean, Gloria. Really, she went back and forth a couple times to make sure that the lines were right. It's really
this
well
is
done.
Dedication it is, to a goal.
It is dedication the likes of which fitness runners usually don't go to. This is amazing. So
if you're gonna run,
yeah, I mean, it's worth it. That's it's some creative stuff. So it's amazing what you can do with a Nike Plus, you know, little Fitbit kind of thing. Well, I hope that we've given you some goals for tonight.
Just one more thing. Querwick Instagram description. I run dicks with Nike Plus. Just trying to save the fucking world.
Wow. Oh my.
I salute you, dick running Nike Plus person.
Oh my God. She's got one that's getting stroked by a hand.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
You went deeper down the rabbit hole, didn't you?
I went to the Instagram.
Oh, okay.
22 December 2014 is.
Oh.
Something.
She, March 22nd, she drew a pussy.
Yeah. December 1, 2014, she did an AT-AT.
Yeah. She did a frickin' AT-AT. I love it.
She did an AT-AT.
Wow, that is amazing. I see the hand. Yeah, that's
yes,
that's incredible. Wow.
And then it's a Boba Fett mask.
For those of you that are Tumblr savvy, it's runningdrawing.tumblr.com. Runningdrawing.tumblr.com. Enjoy. That's all there is to it. Intro.
Incredible.
Glorious.
So on to, that's all the news. That's all of it.
That's all of it.
and then some. is it? Make sure. Just checking. Check. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Okay. Good. All right. I don't want to lose a story. I've done that before. Okay. Entertainment reviews and nitpicks. I have a problem with technology. Hi,
you
I'm
have
Andy.
To have all of it.
Hi, I'm Andy, and I may be addicted to tech.
Maybe? You are. Dude.
I may don't, be addicted to tech. So, I introduced this to my compatriots here last night. This is the Winbook TW700 Windows 8.1 tablet. It's awfully cute. It's roughly 7 inches in size. It does have a quad core Atom processor in it. Only a gig of RAM, but really for most of the things that you're going to do in this form factor, that is sufficient. It does have a front facing and rear facing cameras. They suck. I'll just let you know that right now, but they would be sufficient to let your kids know that you're alive if you have to do like a Skype session somewhere. The big deal with this is that it actually does have a full size USB. It's USB 2, not USB 3. So don't get your hopes up. Not that you'd need USB 3 for this thing anyway. I mean, really, it charges with micro USB and it does have a transflash slot. So you can expand the storage from the paltry 16 gig that comes with it. And it does have an HDMI and headphone out. So with this, technically, you hook up a keyboard and a mouse to it and plug in an HDMI adapter to your TV, and suddenly you have a drumroll, an $80 Windows 8 PC. I don't know what more I could convince you with, other than they also offer a free year of the Microsoft Office 365 subscription. It's really, it works just really well. And don't worry, because it will be eligible for the Windows 10 release later this fall, which will make your computing experience a little more like Windows 7. So don't be concerned with that. It just works. It's quite nice. It isn't the phone version of Windows 8. So it is the full release of Windows 8, full, you know, x86 architecture. So you can run all your apps that you would normally run. So if you want to have Audacity, if you want to have any of the portable apps or things like that, that's the thing I would probably get, you know, like load a thumb drive with portable apps. And then you can run all of those on this little guy. It works great as a reader. I'm still testing on the battery. I usually charge everything whenever I have the option to. It does have built-in Bluetooth, so you could do a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse if you so chose. Wi-Fi is good. It automatically does screen rotation. I'm not sure that you can see it very well here. But it works. It does have, full touch. It does have 5-point gesturing. It's $80 on Amazon. I got the link there. If you're just looking for a little pocket PC, basically, to have at your disposal at any time, if you were thinking about getting an Android, this might be something that you'd consider, because it has some versatility, especially for someone like me that has need of a Windows PC wherever I go. So that's it. It's the Winbook TW700 tablet. And nice. David, you had a pick.
Yep. In honor of all of the legislation coming down the pike, we didn't talk about Indiana. We probably could have hit them. The pro discrimination shit that's been coming from the ultra religious conservative right wing. Mm-hmm. I have put as my pick the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Because let's face it, it's the guys thumping Bibles who are being dicks these days. Let's keep church and state separate, get rid of the Ted Cruz, get rid of these idiots and assets that are legislating as though this were a theocracy. We are not, and we should never be, because
what is this, the goddamn Dark Ages?
Well, I was going to say, what is this, the Middle East?
Yeah, right?
Because that's really the name, people don't understand how similar in actuality Christianity and Islam actually are. So
it all comes out of the same book, guys.
They're technically Abrahamic faiths. So
Christianity begot of ancient Judaism, and Islam begot of ancient Christianity. Is really how that splintered out. But when you start legislating off of those principles and saying that this holy book is how we should run things, that was written in a time where it was okay to rape a woman and pay her father 50 shekels of silver, and that was your wife.
Yep.
Yeah.
We don't live in those times anymore, and we should not pretend that a book written for those times is still relevant to today's politics and ideologies as far as how we treat one another as human beings.
We shouldn't glorify that bad behavior. Mm-hmm.
I was accosted in Walmart yesterday by a very nice little Filipino woman. She was in her 60s, based on the conversation that we had. And she was trying to save my soul in the frozen food section. I thought that interesting. No thanks. I don't want your religious paraphernalia. I'm actually an atheist. I'm cool. No problem. Move along. Nothing to see here. She had to witness to me. It was, it was a goal. It didn't go very, very far for her. I'm still an atheist. amazingly, I said, no, I've read the Bible. That's why I'm an atheist. And, and she said, what did you not understand? And I'm like, what? What did you not understand? It's like, this is going to be a really long conversation if you keep up this way. she went about her business and said that she would pray for me. which is the most passive-aggressive thing that any Christian could possibly do for you. So, yeah! The Freedom From Religion Foundation has also put out a recent ad, TV spot. It was denied being aired on most stations. Most networks would not play it.
CNN. Tell me more about the liberal media.
CNN.
Yeah, because they are, spoiler alert, all paid for by the conservatives.
CNN, on the other hand, CNN would play it. And I'll play it for you right here.
Hi, I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective association of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate, just like our founding fathers intended. Please support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
That's Ron Reagan, Ronald Reagan's son.
I like that guy already.
He's a hoot.
You think they'd let me in? Because I, you know, I'm one of those crazies that actually believes in a higher power.
Of course they'll let you in. Of course, absolutely, no problem. Because really, it is the United States Church State Watchdog Organization.
Yeah.
Really, that's all you have to look at it as. Yeah. You know, you're free to have your religion. We're just also free from it. Yeah, free from it.
Yeah, I was mostly being sarcastic. Because I feel exactly that way. I don't care what you believe. Keep it out of the government.
Exactly.
The government should be run by, you know, rational things, things that are verifiable, like scientific fact. Everything else is, you can't run a government on that. That's stupid.
Yep. So you can go out to ffrf.org. And learn about all the legal action that they do in all of our 50 states, trying to keep the really evangelicals out of the government and keep the government trucking right along, looking out for everybody's interest and not just the religious ones. So, and also their number is 800-335-4021. If you happen to spot a state church violation, give them a call, submit, you know, because basically they can't do anything about it outside their jurisdiction without an advocate within the jurisdiction. So you have to be there and say, I'm against this, and I will go on the record for the court saying that I am against it in my neighborhood. You know, it is affecting me. I have standing in the neighborhood. So that's how the legal system works. So use it. Become a member. They do great work, absolutely great work. And as another podcast that I listen to frequently, they call them the Furfurf. Yeah, just because they don't want to say Freedom From Religion Foundation. So the Furfurf, they do great work. So, Mike, did you have any picks?
I'm going to step out of the political zone, but still in the realm that we like to keep in of getting people to think, you know, provoking thought. And getting people to form their own opinions, because as my little lower third says, I am the rabid gamer. There is a game. It's been around for a while now. I don't remember when it came out, but when it came out, it had some buzz, but it was one of those real intellectual kind of indie titles. So I didn't really look at it. I put it on my maybe I'll do it someday list. And I finally got around to playing this game. It's called The Stanley Parable. And it is a game. It's a game based off of the Half-Life engine. So, it's got a very familiar interface for a lot of gamers. And it is similar to Portal in that it is you, a silent protagonist, and a narrator who is talking to you.
And it's hilarious.
And that is as similar as it gets to any game I've ever played. It's really incredible. Based on the story that is written and the choices that you can make to either, you know, follow the suggestions of the narrator or fuck off and do your own thing. Just really, really weird, cool things come out of it. And at the end of playing with, I played around with this game for, according to Steam, I played this game for slightly over 3 hours total playtime. And that was in one continuous sitting. And I did pretty much everything I could think of inside the Stanley Parable. I don't know if there's any quote-unquote endings that I've missed. That the game doesn't really end. It's actually a tagline of the game. The end is never.
Nice.
But at the end of this game, I just sat there for like a half an hour thinking about the crazy existential, you know, philosophical conundrums that it brought up.
Really?
It cannot be explained. It must be experienced. It's on Steam. It's cheap, and at most, it's going to take an afternoon out of your life.
It is. But, let's see. It's,
but you should dedicate that afternoon.
Steam.
You should dedicate that afternoon to playing the Stanley Parable because it is of all the games out there that I have played, it is the one that I say with the most fervor. It is a work of art. And it shows what, you know, video games as a medium of art can be and how much it can be. It's fantastically written. You have to play it.
According to Steam, the Stanley Parable is a first-person exploration game. You will play as Stanley. And you will not play as Stanley. You will follow a story. You will not follow a story. You will have a choice. You will have no choice. The game will end. The game will never end. User reviews, very positive. 92% out of the 16,631 user reviews for the game.
Yes.
That's a lot of reviews, and that's very positive indeed.
Yeah, that is an enormous number of reviews for
it's huge.
Any of the games on Steam. You see reviews in the dozens. Sometimes you see them in the hundreds for really good titles, but very rarely do you see the thousands. That's a lot of reviews.
GameSpot left a review. It's not the fact that the Stanley Parable makes you think about the nature of choice in games that makes it extraordinary. It's the fact that it does so while simultaneously managing to be a wildly entertaining, hilarious, and surprising experience.
Yes, it's fantastic, and you should absolutely put aside an afternoon to play it.
It's this bouncing between serious tone and irreverence that makes the Stanley Parable so special. You will never know what to expect. There's some definitely good reviews in here, and those are the big ones that was from Joystick. Some good stuff.
Rock Paper Shotgun gave them a positive review. You know, all the big names in game reviewing have done it, and it's just. It's fucking incredible, and you need to play it. And if you don't like it, you have no soul. I'm sorry.
Eurogamer says, and I do this because they use big 20-cent college words, astoundingly labyrinthine, onion-like layers of narrative tangents the player can embark on in what feels like the unholy interactive offspring of Inception, being John Malkovich and Portal.
Yeah.
Like that.
It is like that. And at the same time, it's not like that. None of these reviews come close to really describing the experience because the experience is going to be utterly unique to the way you approach it.
It is all that and more and less all at the same time. So it's, Schrodinger's game.
Yes.
It is both a game and not a game at the same time.
It is both a game and not a game, and I thought it was, and it's fantastically done. I loved every second of it.
Well, that's definitely one to look for. And we've got those links there, www.stanleyparable.com and out on steampowered.com app, 221910. And you can find those links in the show notes. Okay. I think that's going to wrap it. So here we go. Come on. There it is. All right, that's it for us tonight. We'll be back next Friday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. In the meantime, the conversation continues on the web. Head over to orillyradio.com. That's O-R-L-Y, radio.com, for all the links right at the top of the page. And do watch us live if you can, and chat in the IRC at that website. If you have liked what we've done here, you know, you can help us. We have lots of ways to help us. If you want to give us money, and of course, I encourage you to give us money, please go over to patreon.com. That's patreon.com/Cowen, C-O-W-E-N. That would be me. And, well, if you can't contribute money, I understand this. I understand it completely. Please give us topic ideas, send us corrections, because we make mistakes, advertising officers, unclaimed lottery tickets, hate mail, unsolicited other advice, by emailing us, please, at oreillyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can also leave us a voicemail, 470-222-6759, and you could post and vote stories on our subreddit. Hey, leave us a glowing review on whatever platform you found us on. Of course, you could like us on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Google Plus, and please subscribe to the YouTube, where you will find all of the past shows, pretty much, except for some of them. we can't thank you enough for spending some time with us this evening. Until next time, this has been Oh Really Radio, part of the Cowen Services Network. The music Rocket and Pangea was created by Kevin MacLeod of Incomtech.com. Go over there and give him some money too. So, goodbye, everyone. Thank you for being here. Ciao. Bye.